Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, we have an interesting show today. I happen to have Billy Stritch on, coming on. He's a composer, he's an arranger, he's a vocalist, jazz pianist, what else? But right now, he's singing Mel Torme songs on his latest CD. So, what's this all about? How's his career going? And then also, we're going to talk to Kevin Lee about ergonomically correct brooms. But right now, we have Billy on the line. Hello, Billy.
Hey, Merle. How are you?
Oh, just fine. How was the event on Thursday night? I missed it.
Oh, that was great. We did a big variety show at Town Hall. My friend Jim Caruso hosts a thing called Cast Party at Birdland every week. But once a year we take the best people and big stars and big names, and we do a big fundraiser town hall. And it was great. I mean, it was really great. So very happy with the way that went. We had a lot of great stars and a great audience, and it was a fun night. It really was.
Great name drop.
We had Paul O'Shott, who just won the Tony Award 2 years ago for South Pacific. We had Stephanie J. Block, who has done Wicked on the road, and she's about to go back into Anything Goes, taking over for Sutton Foster. We had a wonderful singer named Marilyn May, who I've worked with off and on for many years, a fabulous jazz singer. We had Janice Siegel of the Manhattan Transfer. She opened the show for us. And the list goes on and on. I mean, we had some really, really wonderful singers, and we had a great tap dancer named Andrew Nemmer with his group. We had a wonderful guy who does juggling, you know, that crazy, you know, Marcus Monroe is his name. It was a real old-fashioned variety show, like an Ed Sullivan kind of thing.
Oh,
you know,
that
lots of different
great.
Acts. Yeah, it really was fun.
So now let me see. Aside from, you compose songs.
I do everything. Well, not everything, but I write songs, and I also arrange, and I accompany and play for several other singers. That's what I do a lot. I've been working as Liza Minnelli's musical director and accompanist for 21 years now. And I work with Linda Lavin, who was also on the show Thursday night. Linda Lavin from Broadway and from the TV show Alice.
I actually remember from her from the Mad Show.
Yeah, of course. she does that famous number Boy From. We still do that in her act. Well, I don't have to tell you. sure, that's the one. So I work with her. I work with Christine Ebersole. I work with Marilyn May, as I mentioned before. So I do that, but I also do my own show from time to time. And currently, I've been doing this tribute to one of my favorite jazz singers, Mel Torme. Just a terrific. I think almost kind of, I mean, certainly he was well known, but I think he hasn't quite gotten the recognition that some of the other singers of his era has gotten. So I'm trying to single-handedly change that one show at a time.
Now, so what you're doing is singing the songs he made famous? Is that what
I'm singing? Well, I'm singing some songs he wrote. I'm singing some songs that he made famous. And a lot of it is things that were his favorites, because it's hard, you know, it's like Sinatra, like Tony Bennett, like so many of those singers of that era, he made so many recordings. And, you know, it really was a lot of wonderful songs from the what we call the Great American Songbook. So what I did is I went through a lot of his records, and I read his autobiography. I read a lot about him and picked some of his great arrangements and songs that were things that he recorded many, many times. Like he did A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. He recorded that, I think, at least 8 times.
Right.
And I saw him sing that in concert. So that's in the show. A song called The Folks Who Live on the Hill was another one of his favorites. So that's in the show. You know, Too Close for Comfort. You know, just it's a real mix of hit songs, songs he wrote, and songs that were favorites of his. And I tell a little bit of his historical background, where he was born, his upbringing, his early years at MGM Studios and in L.A., and we kind of go from there. I try not to overload the audience with information, but just to kind of give them a little perspective.
So when you're singing the Mel Torme songs, are you, like, sounding like Mel Torme or just singing?
I don't try to imitate. You know, the reason, well, I always was a fan of his for many years, and people would tell me, gee, you remind me of Mel Torme. I think we have a kind of a similar sound in our voices, a similar timbre, as if you may say that. But I certainly, you know, he had an amazing range. Also, he was a great scat singer, improviser. And I don't try to imitate that or try to do exactly what he did, because he was so fabulous, you know. I just try to you know, do my own take on his music, kind of bring what I do to that so that it's hopefully a mix of my style, you know, but certainly showing his music and his style as well. So, but I would never try to imitate, you know, or do an impersonation.
So in terms of let me ask you about songs. What I know, like, offhand, like songs that you composed?
Yes.
Go ahead.
My biggest claim to fame as a composer is a song that I wrote a few years back called Does He Love You? And it's a duet for two women. And it ended up, it was a song that I used to have a cabaret act in the 80s that was me and two girls. And so they sang this in the act. One is the wife and one is the mistress. And they're all singing about this one man. But I was really lucky in the early 90s to have Reba McEntire, great country singer, pick up on this song and record it with a singer that she was really pushing at the time, named Linda Davis. So they recorded this back in 93, and it became a number one country song, and it's now sold over 5 million copies. And so that's my big, you know, not to say it's a one-hit wonder, but pretty much. I haven't had any – that's the biggest success I've had as a songwriter. I've also written things for Liza. She did a show about 3 years ago called Liza's at the Palace. Which was we did a month-long run at the Palace Theater in New York, and her second song out was a song called I Would Never Leave You, which was kind of like a Valentine to the audience that I co-wrote with Johnny Rogers. And just things like that. You know, I don't really write every day or sit out. That's not really my main thrust. But if someone like that comes to me and said, gee, I have an idea for a song, or, you know, I'm very good at working kind of on spec or for hire, or, you know, if somebody has an idea, you know, that's kind of when I kick my writing gear in. You know, it's writing's a whole different discipline.
And
you have to really kind of make yourself do it all the time and flex those muscles. And I'm sorry to say, I've been spending so much time, you know, my main thrust now is as a performer and an accompanist and all that. So I don't get to write as much as I used to, but maybe it's time for me to get back into that.
So are you writing for yourself? I mean, but you compose some of the songs for yourself?
It's usually for other people, really. Yeah, it's usually for other singers, you know, because not that I couldn't write for myself, but I find that when I'm singing, I'm so attracted to the songs from the Great American Songbook, you know, and jazz songs,
right.
and, And also, I love Brazilian, you know, bossa nova, the Joe Beam and Yvonne Lenz and that kind of stuff. So I always try to put a little of that in my shows as well, you know. But that's really what I love to do is that music. So I find that's really where my repertoire centers on.
So how'd you get into show business anyway?
Oh, showbiz. Well, I just played piano from such a young age. You know, it was just, you know, my first professional job was at 15, playing at a country club in the afternoons. You know, I would come in, the golfers would come off the course and have their afternoon cocktails, and I would take requests. So really from a young age, you know, I learned these great Gershwin and Cole Porter and Irving Berlin and all of that. You know, I would go home every night, and like if someone had requested something I didn't know, I would go home and I would find it. I would find a record of it, or I would go find the sheet music and I would learn these songs, you know. So that enabled me to have a real great repertoire in my head at an early age. And then I started performing in the nightclubs, you know, in Houston, Texas, which is my hometown.
I was going to ask you where you... Is that where you were born and bred?
That's where I was born and bred.
Okay.
So in the 80s, I did a lot of nightclubs there, cabarets, you know, just that kind of scene. And back then, there were lots of clubs because Houston was going through a really great boom, oil boom there in the 80s. So there was no shortage of places to work. So from there, you know, it seemed like the natural progression was to come to New York. And so I had, like I mentioned before, I had a vocal group, me and two girls, and we started working in New York at the Algonquin, at the Oak Room. We worked at some of the clubs in the Village and also some of the jazz clubs. So that was really my entree into New York, into showbiz in New York. And that's just always where I've been. You know, there was just nothing else I was ever interested in doing. You know, I've often thought if I didn't play the piano and sing, what would I do? And I don't have any other talent. So that's it. You know, I'm glad I could do that. So that was my entrance into showbiz. You know, it just seemed like I was destined for that life.
So you're a New Yorker now?
Oh, yeah. I've lived in New York as a resident since 1990 now. So I've been 22 years, yeah.
That's great. So, because I understand you're going to be you got a gig in Brooklyn.
Yes, next Sunday, a week from tomorrow, I'm going to be at Kingsburg.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's right. It's coming up, isn't it?
I mean,
time flies. But yes, I'm doing the Mel Torme show we were talking about in Brooklyn at the Kingsborough Community College with a great trio. I've got a great bass player and a great drummer. And it's a matinee show, which I love doing on the weekends. I love doing the afternoon shows because, you know, people can get out, they see a wonderful show, and then they still have their evening. And I'm excited to go out there because I haven't been – I don't think I've done this show in Brooklyn, so – it's going to be exciting to be out there and see the audience and meet the people out there.
Dude, that'll be interesting for me. I didn't even know they were having shows at there, that community college.
I know. I didn't. This was kind of new for me. You know, I had not heard of this venue before, but since I booked it, I've done more investigation about it. It seems like it's very, very nice, and they do some nice shows. They do a nice series there, so. So I'm excited about it. You know, it's always nice to bring the music to a new venue and a new group of people. And you know, I'm just a big ham. You know, I like to sing wherever they want me to sing. So it'll be exciting. I'm excited about the show and you know, singing some of this great Mel Torme music for this crowd in Brooklyn. I think they'll really enjoy it. I'm hoping.
Have you ever performed at the Queens Theater in the Park?
I have. Oh, yeah, several times. I've worked there with Christine Ebersole. I worked there, I think, last year or the year before with Lucy Arnaz. And I've also done my own show there.
Oh, okay, right.
Before.
I missed that show. Okay.
Yes, and actually I was a funny little story about that. About four or so years ago, they were looking to get a new piano for that stage in that room. So uh, they actually called me up, and I went with them to Steinway, and I picked up the piano. So that's kind of nice. So whenever I play out there, it's like the piano I picked. We narrowed it down to like three or four pianos, and I went from one to the other, and finally after about 30 minutes, I said, "This is the one," and they got it. So
I'm real curious. How do you decide on a piano?
Well, it's just it's the touch. For me, it's the touch. I mean, everybody's different. I like a kind of a not so bright sound. I like a sound that has a little more depth to it. Every piano is totally different. I mean, you can put 10 in a row that look exactly the same and they're the same size and the same model, but they each have a little bit of different personality. So it's just a purely personal preference. But you know, I found them one. I haven't heard any complaints about it. You know, and it was replacing a piano that really, really was in sad shape. So I was thrilled when they decided. I mean, I think I have had to play this piano prior to that, and I said to them, I said, "You really ought to think about investing in something new." You know, so they took my word. I mean, it was nice they actually listened to me and took my advice. So
you mean
that was great.
That's when Jeffrey was there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I like that. Thank you a lot. He's not?
They have a whole new group of people there.
Oh, I can't keep up.
A whole new staff. Well, yes.
Sure. It's a really nice venue, though. You know, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that they do have a nice theater in that little complex there. People drive past it all the time, you know. Yeah. But it's really kind of a pretty theater.
You know, with the pianos, I remember I was in my early 20s, and I wanted a new piano. And I walked into a store, and the guy looks at me like, "I don't know what I'm doing," you know?
Right.
And I said to him, "Well, let me narrow it down. I don't have an apartment that I can have a grand piano. And in terms of the sound, there's no way I want to spin it."
Right.
So let's go from there. So I just said, "I'm going to just go around and, you know, try out these pianos."
Yep.
And he was looking at me like, "Yeah, but," I said, "No, just let me go try out the pianos." And I picked the one because I said, here's a good sound, here's the action, and that's the one I want. That's it.
It's like a personal thing. You know, you have to find the one that kind of speaks to you, I think.
Yeah.
What did you end up getting?
I got a, not Steinway, Baldwin. I got myself a Baldwin console.
Yes, great. I used to have a Baldwin years ago when I first moved to New York, and I liked it very much. Now I have a Yamaha Baby Grand, which is great, you know.
Yamaha was putting out the...
Right. Yeah, but they make really good pianos, especially pianos for clubs or theaters, you know, because they're very durable, I find. You know, they can stand up to lots of tunings and lots of, you know, movings and that kind of thing. You know, they seem to not have too much issue with going out of tune or falling apart.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some other brands that are, you know, they're better suited to staying in one place, you know, but when you know, the theaters, they get pushed all over the place. They get shoved to the corner. They get dusty. They get, you know. So, anyway. So, I always like Yamaha. Yamahas are great for that, you know. They never seem to have a problem.
Well, next time, and I just realized I still have the same piano.
I
think, let's see, 30, 40 years maybe?
Well, you bought a good one, you know. I mean, it's not like you. Yeah, sure. Do you still play? Do you play at all?
Well, I don't play like I used to. I mean, I'm a writer, I'm a journalist. But my background was in show business.
So
and I played the piano because I took piano lessons. I would go from one instrument to another, and I got that if you know how to play the piano and you don't mind dealing with blowing into something, you could probably learn every instrument.
Yeah.
Basic.
That's right. Yeah. If you learn how to read music and you know your way around a keyboard, then you can, you know, pretty much figure out how to make a note, you know, how to make notes now, you know, you're getting really good at another instrument, you've got to work at it. But
you're right. It's let's figure out how this instrument works. What makes it work?
Exactly.
The fingers have to, then you take a little book and see, where's the fingers are going for these notes? And once you got that, then you got to figure out if you can deal with the embouchure.
Well, that was my problem. You know, I played in junior high and high school. I played trumpet, and then my lip was too big for the trumpet. So then I moved to trombone and baritone, euphonium, and all that stuff. And of course, because in high school, you had to play something if you wanted to be in the band, I was all into that. So, and I got pretty good at those in high school, but I haven't. So I could still, play my way around a trombone. But, certainly not like someone who really does it, But you're right. It's always good. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, do you ever play it in your show? You have a grip?
No.
No, you don't want people to really get to do that.
No. It's just piano for me,
I can understand that.
Yeah.
So, in terms of shows here, so... after you're doing the show in Brooklyn, what's up after that?
Well, then I have a show with Liza. We're doing the Borgata in Atlantic City. I believe that's the 24th of March. I don't have my calendar right in front of me. I also have a show with Linda Lavin on the 17th of March down in Wilmington, North Carolina, with the symphony down there. Which we're excited about. It's just a lot of one-nighters for me coming up, actually. The next club date that I have is, this might be good to know for your listeners, I'll be performing 2 weeks playing for the great singer Marilyn May at Feinstein's. We opened there, I believe, on the 24th of April for 2 weeks at Feinstein's in New York. And she's a magnificent jazz singer. She... I don't know. Are you familiar with her at all, Merle? Marilyn?
No, I'm not. But I will get familiar.
She was Johnny Carson's favorite singer, and made 76 appearances on the Tonight Show when Johnny was the host. More than any other singer, he always had her back in New York, and then when he went to L.A., she was on the show a lot of times. She almost never went to the couch and was interviewed. She almost always, sang a song or two. But she made a lot of records in the 60s and 70s for RCA. And I met her in 1980. She was working at a nice club in Houston, Texas, where I'm from. And I used to go hear her all the time. I was 18, 19 years old, and I'd never, ever seen a performer, not only who could sing so well, but who was such a great entertainer. And funny and really great with the audience and spontaneous and all of that. And she has just kept going. And about seven or so years ago, she was invited to do the cabaret convention at Jazz at Lincoln Center. They were honoring Jerry Herman that night. And I said to her, you ought to book it. You ought to do a night in New York at a club. Songs are coming up. So we got her a night at the Metropolitan Room down on 22nd Street. And she was like, nobody's going to come. Nobody will remember me. And it was a total sellout. And she's come back. She's had 11 return engagements at the Metropolitan Room and also at Feinstein. She's had this great resurgence in her career. She's about to be 84. She's been in show business a long time. But you would never know it. I mean, she wouldn't mind me saying that because she says her age anyway. But she has an incredible, incredible energy and incredible voice and just swings great. And just she really is, has more energy than most singers half her age. So I'm very excited. I've worked with her for many years off and on. And I'm excited to be doing the 2 weeks with her at Feinstein. So that'll be a fun gig. That's end of April, first week of May.
So
that's my next big club thing.
So you got May at May, huh?
Yeah, April 24th, I think, through May the 5th.
So when you're there, by the way, I know because I'm sure I'm going to get a press release. I get press releases from...
Great.
And I can't think of his name. The guy who handles Feinstein.
Yeah. Yes. Is it Miller Wright?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Right. Well, he'll let you know, and you'll have to come see it, because I think you'll love her. You'll really love her.
Is that an invitation, or do I have to get there? I think they have to do it,
because you know that's the other thing. I never get any comps for fine signs, but you know if you just get in touch with me kind of closer to the beginning of that engagement, I'll make sure you're on the press list. You know, I'll do whatever I can do, because I'd love for you to come see her.
Now, just let me ask this. I'm not going to say anything, but the number that's coming up for you calling in, would that be a way for me to get in touch with
you? That's my number. That's
okay.
Right. So you can call me. You can call me anytime, and I will. And remind me, and I will. I'll pull the strings, and I'll see if I can get you in there. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. I won't announce it on the air. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Good.
So I guess I'm looking forward to seeing you at the what is it? Brooklyn?
Kingsborough Community College. And I if you go to their website, I think there's still tickets available for your listeners. Mm-hmm. It's a 3 o'clock show a week from tomorrow. It's Sunday, March the 4th, I believe. Is that the day? Is that? I don't have my calendar in front of me, but I think it's the 4th. Anyway, it's a 3 o'clock show, and I encourage everybody to come see it.
Well, if they're in New York, this isn't local by any chance.
All right then.
But anybody who's in
anybody within 100-mile radius.
Within 100-mile radius of New York City.
That's right. That's it. That's absolutely right.
But
you go all over. People listen to you all over the place. I got you.
Yes. So, and you have your CD out now too, right?
I have my CD of the music from the show. It's called Billy Stritch Sings Mel Torme. It's available on iTunes, and it's also available through my website, which is billystritch.com. Easy. Billy Stritch, Stritch.
You know, I forgot to ask to get your CD so I can load up some songs.
Right. Now
that
wasn't good planning. I should have thought about that.
But however, it doesn't mean that I can't get it now, and then when I'm not even interviewing you, just say, you know, because what I do is I'll in between guests and such, I just put on some music.
Yes.
So I can load up some of yours too and push
it. Great. I love that.
Okay, that'll be absolutely fabulous. So, I appreciate you calling in.
It's my pleasure.
And then we'll meet face to face.
Absolutely, I'll see you there. That'd be great.
And by the way, just so in case, my background is being a comedian. So
all right.
Expect little things coming out of my mouth that I can't control anymore.
I know, right. And why should you? Right?
Right.
That's right.
Okay.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, same here. Have a great day, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Great.
Okay.
All right. Great, Merle. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was fabulous, huh? Having having Billy on the air now. Before I go, have my next guest. What I want to do, I have to do a sponsor break. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. Where are you? Yes. That was Esther. Come on, Eunice. They want to make you know, that they're here. So we hear a message from our sponsor now. Let's go. There we are. Let's go. Clicking. Yes.
What would you do to earn brownie points?
How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. And you can get these wonderful, wonderful brownies by going to www.brownies.com. Yes, I haven't eaten yet. And I guess I'm going to make something with chocolate after breakfast. But in the meantime, it's the weekend. It's Saturday. It's cleaning day. So I'm going to get out that broom and the dustpan. And I happen to have an ergonomically correct one. And Kevin is on the air right now to tell us about it.
Kevin. Hello, Merle. How are you, man?
Oh, just fine. So
wonderful, wonderful.
I understand you came up with ergonomically correct a robo handle, a robo broom, a robo dustpan. So what is this all about?
Oh boy, I am a general contractor here in Chicago, Illinois area. And we do a lot of work for Chicago Public School, and half the job is cleaning up afterwards. I don't care. As a contractor, you could do the best job in the world, but if you leave your place messy, your customer will just hate you. They won't even pay you. So the cleaning is a big part of this operation. My gosh, cleaning is a big part of the operation everywhere throughout the world. Unfortunately, this broom, the current broomstick and this dustpan, and we all know throughout the world, the way you use it, when you hold that thing, if you go to McDonald's or if you go to Burger King, these restaurant place, the way you hold it, watch all those workers, how they hold their broom. They all look like cockroaches, the way they bend their wrist and hold their broom in the dustpan. They look like a bunch of cockroaches, you know, hold the way they're holding that darn thing. And the reason why is that broomstick is straight. And when you grab that broom, unfortunately, you have to twist your wrist because our hand grip is perpendicular to our arm. Yet, this broomstick is straight, and when you try to hold that darn thing, your arm is in a parallel position with that broomstick. So in other words, right away, you already experiencing a difficulty because are we a contortionist or whatever, you know, that we're able to twist our arm this way, that way to hold all this broomstick and dustpan. But yet we're forced to grab the way it is, and then we're trying to maneuver the darn thing. So a lot of people do, they put their broomstick in their armpit, they wrap it around their arm and this and that, trying to swing that darn broom, and it is absolutely ridiculous. And what they want you to do, they want you to use two hands to use that broom. And if you're trying to just move a debris on the floor, which may not weigh that much, yet why are you forced to use two arms to use that broom? It doesn't make any sense. So that's why I came out with this thing called Robo Handle, which can be attached to any tools out there. But I had to come out with the broom and the dustpan first because I have to show people what this invention is all about. Just with my invention, just the handle alone, people look at it and they'll say, what is that? I never seen anything before in my entire life. Yet, as soon as I place this inside on a broom and a dustpan, push mop, dust mop, they get it. As soon as they put their hand in there and grab that pistol grip, they experience the most easiest ergonomic way to maneuver broom, dustpan, all the tools out there. And then this is the reason why, you know, we came out with this idea, because we use this apparatus all the time in our job, and now all our workers and our friends and family, they absolutely love it. And now the product is finally in the local Ace Hardware store here in Chicago area. We live in a town called Glenview, Illinois, and there's a three Ace Hardware store. It's already placed in a three Ace Hardware store. We're also talking with Home Depot. They're very much interested in getting it. And for the first time,
yeah,
we're going to also export this to Canada. Out of
wow.
all things. You know, we're trying to, everybody emphasize, made in USA again.
Yeah.
And you watch Channel 7, whatever news. That's
oh, you just
all
throw
you
that
hear,
too?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, you know, all we talk about is made in USA. Why is everything made in China, blah, 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 and all this and that? Well, guess what? Out of all commodities, out of all things, a broom. Can you imagine us making the broom and dustpan here in the United States and there's other countries want our product? This is an absolute miracle. It's an absolute miracle in itself. I mean, this thing should be on a nightlight. How can an American company, a broom company, they could be exported to Canada? And the reason why is when I showed this new invention to my patent attorney, he couldn't believe. He never seen anything like it. He never seen a broom where you could hang this thing anywhere, any kind of hole. You know, that's another problem. The existing broomstick, you cannot hang that anywhere. That little tiny hole, where are you supposed to hang that thing? You put it against the wall, the bristle gets all bent, damaged, and all that. Our broom, you could hang it on even on 2x4 because that you it's right in front of you. You could rotate that ring, and it has a resistance, so you could hang that thing just about anywhere or any kind of ledges, and it could even stand upside down on its own. So you never have any excuse of putting that broom down on the floor again. Even a wheelchair person could use our broom, a push broom, because it's so easy to maneuver because you're not relying on your wrist to maneuver this darn thing, but you are using your bicep and tricep, the biggest part of your muscle, and that's why this feels so light. Now, a lot of people have a wrist problem, this thing called carpal tunnel. It's pretty unique how the wrist is engineered and designed, you know, on our arm. You know, the carpal tunnel, you got about 7 or 8 bones surrounding the median nerve. And the way the darn thing is designed is so, so darn fragile. If you take an x-ray of your wrist, it is so ridiculously fragile. A bunch of bone structure, you know, hanged on by a bunch of ligaments and this and that. And then you got right in the middle, you got a center median nerve. And after a while, using your broom or any type of these tool handle where there's a repeated motion that's involved, especially for like janitors and custodians, my gosh, after a while, all that kinetic energy has to be absorbed on your wrist, just like a brake pad on your car. When you're traveling, all of a sudden you have to hit the brake, all that kinetic energy is being dissipated on your brake pads. Same thing with our tool handles. When you maneuver these things, what happens is that it's a cycle. It goes back and forth. But guess what? There's a kinetic energy that you have to generate, and it has to be absorbed on your wrist, and that energy becomes heat, and guess what? You get inflammation, it pinches the median nerve, and that's what carpal tunnel is all about. Now, can you imagine all those poor souls? And those are the most unspoken heroes are the janitors, custodians throughout the world. You know, a lot of them can't even speak English, and they say, well, guess what? You know, I mean, these employers, which, you know, they don't care about this. All they do is care about their bottom lines. Giving them that this piece of crap tool, and they don't care if their employees or their workers get these kind of pain on their wrist, arm, and back. They don't care. So this is all about for them. This is, you know, people like me actually using these type of broom, these apparatus, and all those poor souls, all those unspoken, unsung heroes out there who clean our environment every day. And it's so important because guess what? If you don't clean, your environment will get all messy, and that breeds disease, germs, and even a mop, too. Those mops. Did you ever go to a restaurant, Merle, and you saw those wet mops being placed on the floor, discarded for a few weeks or whatever, and all of a sudden you start, you know, mold starts growing and this and that. You know why? Those darn mops, they cannot hang it anywhere. You look at the mop, the pole, there's, even if it's a little tiny, how are you supposed to, you know, hang that darn thing?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. But with our invention, with not even 1 ounce of fat in our design, with our design, it's so simple, yet it's so functional because the pistol grip that you see, you could hang that darn thing anywhere, even on a door trim. Even on a door trim, you could
hang that thing, that wet mop, you put a bucket underneath, guess what? Now your wet mop's going to be air dried. Does not have to be placed against the wall. And you go to the restaurant today, man. Look at all their wet mops, McDonald's here, there, whatever. They place this ridiculous mop against the wall. And they let it just sit there. And can you imagine all the damage it's doing to the drywall, or, you know, they have to clean the wall afterward. And plus, if they let it sit there for a while, all the it promotes all the germs and bacteria growing on the wall, the floor, and this and
Kevin,
that.
So, Kevin, let me ask you a question. So, in other words, you also, I mean, I have the broom and the dustpan. So, if you get the robo handle, you can apply it to a wet mop.
Virtually anything, because if you go to our website, it's called www.siitools.com.
Right.
We also provide all these different sizes of handle. Now, we have, right now, we have 22 millimeter, 23 millimeter, 24, 25, 26 millimeter. The 22 millimeter, the first one, equals to about 7/8 inch diameter tool pole or a broomstick pole. Typically, you know, with cedar or quickie or Rubbermaid, any type of swinging type of broom, it's typically 7/8 inch diameter. So if you order 22 millimeter diameter robo or 23 millimeter diameter robo handle, you could cut off the head and you could retrofit the existing broom, so you don't waste money, you know, buying another broom. You could retrofit that thing and put six of these sheet metal screws, and voila, you have a robo broom attached to your existing broom. Now it becomes a robo broom. So later on, we will also have a large robo broom size, which is a 30 millimeter, which you can place this thing on a snow shovel. Oh my God, it's heavenly. If you go to our website, like I said, www.siitools.com, and go to the video section, you'll see my wife shoveling snow. And she loves it. Reason why, you feel so much lighter. Because if you go to Home Depot and all these places, they got these snow shovels with that regular D-shaped snow shovel. And again, when you try to lift that darn snow shovel, you know, when it's fully loaded, you're relying on your vulnerable wrist.
Right.
Take brunt of that, that energy that it, you know, it has to compensate. And if you notice, your wrist is the weakest part of your arm. I mean, you got your elbow, which is a hinge joint, and you got your ball joint up an upper part of your arm attached to your torso. But your wrist, which is called an ellipsoidal joint, that is the most vulnerable. And guess what? Any kind of mechanical system you have, the first place it will break is the weakest link. It doesn't matter. Let's say you got about 10 chain links. Guess what? You don't get. You know where it's going to break when you pull on that darn thing? At the weakest point. So if you look at your arm when you're using your tools and this, guess where? First, where you're going to experience the pain the most? Your wrist, obviously. And then, of course, your fingers and this and that, and elbow, arm, back, and everything else. Now, what people have to realize, I know I'll kind of go off on pains. I'm also a mechanical engineer, degreed mechanical engineer, graduate of Illinois Institute of Technology, IIT. And I used to work for General Motors and some of these other companies as a chief engineer designing products and all this. And then in the last 16 years, I've been a general contractor for Chicago Public School and stuff. But what I'm trying to say is, a human being, as a mechanical engineer, you know, we are very familiar with this thing called, this notion called torque. Torque is a byproduct of tangential force multiplied by radial arm. And that is the definition of torque. And human body, because we're made of bones, we're not worn. We don't stretch. We don't have any telescopic body, a part of a body or anything. But
right.
We are a mechanical. We're all built up with just bones and flesh. But any movement that we make, whether we walk, stand, lift things, or this or that, what we are doing, we're generating torque. I know I'm going to lose a lot of people when I say these things, but this is everything about torque, ma'am.
Well,
and
you know,
what we,
when
human
you,
being,
Kevin,
what
Kevin,
human, what human being are, people are a torque generating machine, and I'll be the first one to quote that in the entire human race, human history. What human being are, and we are a torque generating machine, and also a torque eliminating machine. Now, there's many instances we have to generate torque to maneuver or to make it easy, but guess what? There's external force. That torque is working against us, too, and we have to counterbalance that torque. For example, don't they have, a lot of people tell you when you lift things, they tell you to take the object very close to you, right? Did you ever hear that?
No.
Yeah, when you, let's say you're lifting a water bottle.
Yeah.
They want you to hug the water bottle and go straight up instead of having the water bottle, try, you know, extend your water
right.
bottle and you try to lift that. It's very heavy because the reason why is you have this moment arm. It's called radial arm. And once you introduce that, that big, heavy water bottle's generating a torque that is killing your back to counterbalance that darn thing. Now, what this robo handles is the same principle. Instead of you holding that broomstick, which on your palm of your hand to your where your wrist is, so it's about 1 inch in radial arm. Now, with this ring, you are increasing that radial arm to about 6 foot. That's why you're generating so much more torque maneuvering this broom and the other apparatus, making it so easy to use. I hope I could, you know, I hope I made that clear.
That it'll make cleaning fun, but it make it easier, right?
Yes, ma'am. And a lot of elderly folks that we give samples to, they love it now. Like my father, he's 85 years old. He cannot twist his hand to grab the regular broom and use the regular broom. He has a carpal tunnel broom and everything. For the first time in the last 5 years, for the first time, he's able to put his hand there, grab the pistol grip, because that's how you were born, you know, holding that pistol grip perpendicularly to your arm, not parallel. And
right.
now he's able to use the broom, the dustpan. And our dustpan is fabulous. Because the existing dustpan, if you go to, like, you know, all this restaurant, they got this Rubbermaid dustpan. And the dustpan, it rocks and forth, and it rocks. So, in other words, when you put a debris, when you put garbage in there, you cannot dump this thing with one hand, not just because it's heavy as heck. Well, you just cannot lift that darn thing. And you have to use two hands. In other words, you have to touch that disgusting dustpan to unload. Now, can you imagine that thing's been sitting around for year after year after year, all the germ disease that thing is promoting, I mean, the presence of all that germ disease, and these employees are touching that disgusting dustpan, and they're unloading. How gross is that? And then they're not even going to wash their hand with this. They're probably going to, you know, touch your food and this and that. Now, if the employer, intelligent employer, were to give this robot dustpan where you never have to touch that dustpan itself and just pick that up with one hand and just unload it, how safe and clean would that be? Just imagine all the benefit that's going to give your employees. Because a lot of employees, you know, they call in sick because they got a back problem or, you know, work-related injury, you know, carpal
right.
tunnel and this and that. So basically this eliminates all that problem. It's such a simple idea, and it's so affordable because a lot of people, they go to Walgreens and they purchase this $20 to $30 wrist support. It's a wrist isolating device. So what it is, it's got a bunch of ribs or made of plastic or metal or whatever, and it isolates your wrist movement so you could grab onto things. So when you lift or whatever, your wrist doesn't move. Well, guess what? What this is the same thing. You've got a wrist support built into the tool, basically. But it is so simple, yet it is so affordable. These are like a medical device, you know, these wrist supports and stuff. You know, they are so darn expensive. It's ridiculous. But, you know, the fact that this product, I designed this thing so, you know, this thing is so simple, as you can see, you know.
Right.
It's so ridiculously easy. And, you know, just a, you know, about what, half a, not even a, maybe a quarter pound of plastic material, which is probably like, what, about maybe 80 cents a pound or whatever. It's so simple and easy to make, and it's affordable that everybody in the entire world will benefit from this thing. So
that's really great. By the way, the only reason I even heard of the word torque is because of the movie Vinny. Because there's a part where his fiance is talking about a car, and he talks about the torque. And that's the only reason I've ever heard of the word.
Now, when you're talking about torque in the car, they could be talking about several things, you know, torque in your engine, your wheel, how it's torquing.
Yeah, I think she was talking about the wheel.
Exactly, the wheel, you know, because you have to generate the torque in order to make the wheel spin, basically.
Yes, that's what she was talking about, because it's about leaving tire tracks. And the torque on this one, or whatever, I'm going, whatever that is. And she goes, and that's why the tire tracks, if you had blah, 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 then it wouldn't do this, the torque, whatever. and she repeats it again, they didn't make this particular car with torque, or whatever thing, you know.
Oh,
so I went, well, now I know the word, but.
Torque's a very, very, very important word, and it is being applied just about anything that we do in human society, whether we use any kind of apparatus or this, or like I said, you know, human body itself is a torque-generating machine. Without torque, you know, nothing would work, you know. It's just a simple fact of life, you know. We have to utilize our environment, our mechanical system, you know, and that's what this, you know, college course called Physics 101 is all about, you know, simple machine with Newton's law, Newton's three laws and all that. I tell you, if people just sit down and think about these little things, especially the engineers or technicians who are involved designing tools for people to handle and maneuver, they should really realize, you know, what they are working with. And one of the big important subject matter is all about torque and, you know, how you utilize to engineer your product much to make it more ergonomic. And when you go to, you know, places like a hardware store, and I see some of these tools, and it's ridiculously engineered, and I'm questioning them because it just doesn't make any sense. It's so, really, you know, some of these tools are so hard to use, and they do not understand the concept of torque, you know, about balance, about, you know, Newton's first law, second law, third law, and all that. So it's kind of heart-wrenching. And unfortunately, here in America, we don't educate our children too well on these things. For example, you know, the force, pound. And, you know, in metric, they will say kilogram, right, Myrtle?
Yeah.
You know, if they, okay, let's say you weigh 100 pounds, so how many kilograms would that be? And everybody tell you, you know, oh, that's about maybe 45 kilograms. And they have no idea what they're talking about because pound and the kilogram is not the same thing. One's a force unit and one's a mass unit. In other words, let's say you weigh 100 pounds here and you go to the moon, you might weigh only 50 pounds and a lot. And I ask this question, let's say you weigh 50 kilograms here on Earth, how many kilograms would you weigh in the moon? You know what they all tell me? Oh, about 20 kilograms. And it's outrageous because kilograms are mass unit. And
right.
What did you do? What did you do? Did you just cut yourself in half? It's a totally, you know, a lot of people don't realize, and everybody should really know what a force is. A force is equal to this thing called mass times acceleration. In this case, force pound, which is equal to, you know, mass, which is kilogram times meter per second squared. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that the force, that pound and kilogram, is absolutely a different animal. You know what a word for kilogram in English is, man? I know you probably never heard of this.
No.
I'll give you the exact equivalent to what a kilogram is. You know what it is?
No.
It's called a slug.
A slug.
Slug is the same thing as kilogram. I'm the first one to say this in your radio station, I'm sure. Slug is the same thing as kilogram. Now, pound. You know what pound is equivalent to in metric? Not kilogram. You know what it is?
What?
It's called a Newton. It's called a Newton, man. So let's say somebody talks about, I weigh 200 pounds. in metric, they should really give it to you in newtons, not in kilograms, but in newtons. They are same thing. Newton and pound the same thing, and kilogram and slug is same thing. Anyway, this is just a fundamental thing that you learn in, you know, a second or third year in high school physics class and stuff like that. But this is so important. The reason I say this is how bad we are educating our children. We're not even teaching them the simple things like units. You know, numbers are meaningless. My children, I emphasize my 10 and 11, 13-year-old, unit, unit, unit. Number is meaningless without units. You have two apples and three oranges. Are you going to add them together and you're going to say five orange apples? No. These units, from the beginning, you know, since starting out, you know, seventh, eighth grade, and high school and down, we need to educate our
Kevin, teacher. Kevin, I want to interrupt you because I want to ask you something regarding
sure,
the
sure.
I want to go back to the robo broom.
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I mean, I guess I was trying to say that, you know, all these things all relate to the physics of this tool handle called robo handle. It's all about.
But what I wanted to ask you is, like, in terms of using it, like people, like there's something like they're, I guess, if you want to call it, like dusting the ceiling or areas that are high, that are above you, is that like more comfortable also by doing that?
Absolutely, because a lot of time when you have a duster, they got that extension pole, and they got a duster on top of that extension pole. Now, you have no choice but to use two hands to maneuver that pole to take off those spider webs and all that, you know, stuff that's up in the ceiling, like the ceiling fan cleaner. You know, ceiling really got that extension where you extend it out, you clean that. You got to also think, if you could do this with just one hand, without handle, you can't just maneuver this thing with just one hand. I kid you not. No two-hand, because if you raise another hand, you are spending that much more energy, it's killing your back, because your back has to counterbalance that torque, the weight of that thing. So if you could just use one hand and do the cleaning, how simple would that be? You know, that's
right.
The whole idea of this, you know, tool handle, and, you know, the having it more ergonomic, you know, why use two hands? And also think about, there's a lot of, you know, war veterans and a lot of disabled people that have only one arm. What about those people?
So you can either go on to siitools.com to buy it or check soon in, like, Home Depot, I guess, or Ace Hardware. To find out.
Ace Power at Home Depot, where right now, I mean, currently I am trying to get hold of their corporate
office.
In the meantime, you could order our product in our website. Broom is $19.99, but shipping and handling is included. And also the dustpan is $24.99, but shipping and handling is included. You know, with this gas price these days, but shipping is
well,
so
hard. Kevin, I have to interrupt you because the show is about to end.
Sure.
So I appreciate that you called in and told us all about this. We're going to go off the air in about 30 seconds, so I have to say goodbye to you now.
Thank you very much. If you need further information, call me anytime, ma'am.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Kevin. And have a great
day. You have
a
wonderful day, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Yes, okay. Till next show, which I don't know.